Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
The first round of the 2011 NBA playoffs are well underway, and the Western Conference playoff matchup we're going to shine the spotlight on is the Dallas Mavs and the Portland Trail Blazers. And our source for the Mavericks is their television play-by-play announcer, Mark Folliwell, who always delivers in a big way when game time rolls around. Mighty Mark, it is so great to have you back with us. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, always good to talk to you. Always good to be on the Big E Show. How you doing, Elizabeth?
I'm doing great. First of all, where in the world do we start? I mean, the Mavs have really flexed their muscles early. They've taken care of business. They've protected that home base. And most importantly, Mark, you know, they capitalized on the opportunity just to make a statement and to come out early and set the tone.
Well, I thought that the A key, I wouldn't say the key, but I did think that it was very, very high on the list was that, you know, when you look at the Mavs' past playoff history, they've had this four-year run now where they've gotten bounced out in the first round three times. They did win one series. And the only series that they won happened to be the only series where they swept their consecutive home games. They took games 3 and 4 in succession against San Antonio in the 2009 first round. Now, other than that, you look at game 1 to Golden State in 07, game 4 to New Orleans in 2008, Game 3 in the series against Denver in the second round in 2009, and then Game 2 of the series last year against San Antonio. You know, this team has really, really struggled on the road. They've lost 16 of their last 18 playoff games on the road, if you want to go all the way back to the 2006 finals. So the failure to protect their home court has been a contributor to their undoing in the first round or in any playoff series in the last 4 years. So I think that it was very, very important for them to take advantage of having a better regular season, of being the better team, of starting with your first two games at home, and for once, put the pressure on the other team. Make them have self-doubt. Make them question themselves. Make them have to face the hard questions from their media. Just put them back on their heels a little bit. Make them chase the series. And Dallas was able to do that by grabbing these first two games. And psychologically, it puts them in a much better state. And Portland, obviously, in a much worse state coming into the two games up in Portland.
Well, Mark, they're playing certainly with a lot of confidence. They've got that moxie and swagger when they take the floor. And I just want to step back for a moment. We think about before the playoffs even began, it seemed like all teams, you know, they wanted to face Dallas in that first round. And the Mavs really had the perception of being the underdog. I guess it's, you know, a great lesson to be learned. You never can underestimate your opponent. You've got to respect them. I mean, do you think Portland did that?
I don't think that they underestimated Dallas. I'm sure that they had respect for them. Look, I've talked to A. McMillan before. You know, he's not the kind of coach that's going to allow his team to not respect Dallas. That doesn't mean that they might not have felt that they could have beaten them. But I don't think he's going to allow his team to prepare for a series and not be respectful of the opponent and what their capabilities are and be aware of their strengths and weaknesses for that matter. So I think that, you know, one thing that changed for Dallas was they were able to get kids some fresh legs with some rest late in the year and managing his minutes for the entire season. I think that you can't overlook the fact that they did win their last four games of the regular season to have a little bit of momentum. And I think the Stevenson change into the starting lineup and not playing Roddy, I do think that that's helped the team a little bit too. When I say Roddy, I'm referring, of course, to Rodrigue Bobois, their second-year player. You know, let's be honest, he struggled in his time late in the season, and I think that that was having a domino effect on the entire team. So I think that they got back to a little bit of their defensive identity, got back to some toughness and some grit by making that lineup change for the last regular season game. That's been the starting lineup here in these first two games, and I think that's been among the many contributors that have this team playing better here in the first two games of the playoffs than what we saw coming down the stretch of the regular season.
Mark Folliwell along with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We are breaking down the Mavs and the Portland Trail Blazers. The big series, of course, Mark, is the Mavs television play-by-play announcer, and there are just so many storylines in regards to this series. It's hard to wrap your arms around it. Let's start off, let's talk about these veteran players, Dirk Nowitzki and Jason Kidd. I mean, here Dirk's been in the league 13 years, Jason 17, and they're playing with fresh legs, and you really have to have a sincere appreciation for how they're contributing at the most pivotal time.
Well, you are right. They are playing with fresher legs. Kidd played 228 fewer minutes than he did last year, and Dirk played 535 fewer minutes this year than he did last year. So certainly you would think that that has to be of some benefit when you get to the playoffs, having not taken as much of a toll on their bodies this year as they did last year with the minute workload. But I think most importantly is I think you see two veterans who have had tremendous careers, who have done everything you could possibly do except for win a championship. And I think that that is something we can't underestimate in terms of what's driving those guys, because for what everyone said about the Mavs coming down the stretch of the regular season, this is still a team that won 57 games in an ultra-competitive Western Conference, that for the first 2 months of the year played as good a basketball as anyone in the NBA. They're not going to be as good as they were in the first 2 months because of the absence of Caron Butler, but this is still a team that is really, really good, that has a lot of talent, and I think within the framework of that locker room, it's a team that feels like it's got the ability to win a championship. So they're giving, you know, everything they can, and they're just highly motivated because of that, because Dirk wants it so badly, because Kidd wants it so badly. And look, let's be honest, this might be the end of the line for Jason, because if things go in a bad way with the looming labor situation in the NBA and a worst-case scenario happens where there's a real battle and there's an Armageddon sort of situation with next season and it gets wiped out, then this is the end of the road for Kidd. I think if something happens, and he's alluded to it basically, that if there's some sort of lost season, then he's going to retire. So I think with the team being as good as it is, with the opportunity that it's out there, because, you know, you look at a lot of teams and everyone has their weaknesses, and so I think it's fair to say that this thing is relatively wide open. I think that's the incredible thing that's driving these guys, Dirk and Kidd. It's just that desire for that one last thing to cap off Hall of Fame careers, and that, of course, is a ring.
Mark, give us your analysis on Jason Kidd. I mean, why has his shot been so effective? I mean, yes, he's playing with a sense of urgency, but his stroke has really come alive. He's been an X factor.
Well, you know, he's been a guy who's late in his career has really reinvented himself as a great spot-up shooter, and when he gets his feet set, you know, the guy can be a tremendous outside three-point shooting threat. We saw that much more over the long haul last year when he shot 42.5% on threes. He only shot 34% this year. It wasn't quite the same. Maybe age taking a little bit of a toll there, but again, they managed his minutes this season where he played fewer minutes. Fresher legs are going to help on your jump shot, as you know. And he did some work late in the season. He did some shot doctor work with Tim Gergerich, who served as a consultant and as a part-time assistant coach with the Mavs this year. A really, really well-respected basketball mind, a guy who's been around the NBA for a long period of time in the college game as well. And so they did some work together late in the season at the time that Kidd was taking off from playing games. There was a lot of shot doctor work, and I think that's probably helped him get it back on track too. And I think that there's a switch that some of these guys have that they can turn on when it gets to these most important games of the year, especially whenever you're driven again by the fact that you got a shot at that one last thing that you want to cap off your career.
Mark, I'd love to get your perspective on this. One thing I've noticed from watching the Mavs is just in their half-court offensive set, how much more deliberate they are with setting their screens, the body-on-body contact, and then waiting for the screen, you know, utilizing the screen properly, and that's been able to free up those perimeter players.
Well, sure. You know, that's a thing that we talked about a little bit in our Game 2 broadcast. I think there was a particular case where Tyson Chandler got caught for an offensive foul. It was the second foul of the first quarter, and it was a moving screen, but again, you know, the guards got to make sure that the big guy is set. You got to wait on that screen and then, you know, run your guy into it to rub him out. So, you know, being physical, setting hard screens, playing with force, you know, those are always keys that Rick talks about when it comes to winning basketball, and especially winning basketball at playoff time. So, you know, every offense in the league is going to have a lot of pick and roll in their game. The Mavs are no different, and that's a big aspect of it. Setting a good screen, using it properly, you know, make sure that you don't get your big guy caught in a bad spot where he's going to be moving and potentially pick up an offensive foul because of that. And the Mavs have done, you know, in terms of executing that aspect of their offense, they're doing a really nice job of it.
You know, and we've talked about this before, you know, paying attention to detail and in many ways sweating the small stuff, because those small things make a very big difference.
Well, you know, Rick would say that it's a process, Alyssa. You know, he'll tell you that you know, an NBA game is long, and you've got to focus on the keys to success, play it possession by possession. And I know a lot of people think that this is coach speak, but I do think that there is a real element of truth about that, that if you step on the floor in minute one thinking about the result you're trying to achieve in minute 48, you know, you just get way too ahead of yourself and your head's not in the right spot. You've got to play it possession by possession, and yes, sweat the small stuff, focus on the details, realize what your keys to success are, and realize that the game is a process, and you have to do everything that makes up the process, everything that makes up your keys to your game, your plan for success. You've got to do all of that stuff, possession by possession, you know, come out and focus on the first 6 minutes before the timeout, and then focus on the next 3 minutes before timeout and reevaluate that. And I don't think sometimes people realize how segmented an NBA game is, or any basketball game is for that matter, when you look at it that way. But it really is you know, a little chunk here, a little chunk there, and you just keep on going through the game, and it adds up to what you hope at the end is the result that you want. But I don't think you step on the floor at the beginning getting wrapped up so much in the result as you do just focusing on the little things in the process leading to the result that you want.
And you know, Mark, many times it's really about segmenting, staying in the present, taking it one thing at a time. And it's interesting, you know, so much we highlight, we talk about all the great players, the depth that the Mavs have, but really you have to tip your hat to Coach Rick Carlisle and just what a fantastic job he's doing managing so many players. The thing that really gives the Mavs a leg up against, I think, Portland is the fact that they truly are nine deep. I mean, on any given night, someone's going to step up and they're going to shine brightly.
Well, I think that Rick likes the fact the team is constructed that way. He's a big believer in strength in numbers, and that's why he's said that, yeah, we're going to have a playoff rotation, but you can argue that any one of our 13 guys when healthy are someone who should be playing, because even the guys that aren't in the regular rotation, Brian Cardinal, for example, is a guy who's going to go out and do the dirty work and take some charges, or Beaubois, when he gets healthy, still has the potential role as an X factor off the bench, because if he's hot, he can get you easy baskets and score in bunches. And Corey Brewer is a unique player because he's got some length and some defensive ability and runs the floor and plays at a tremendously high level of energy. So all of these guys bring something to the table in addition to the nine guys. And the Mavs really truly believe in that concept of strength in numbers. And you know, Rick's right at the forefront of being a supporter of that and having that depth. And, you know, it helped them get to where they were in the regular season. You know, he used all of those components, pushed a lot of different buttons, and managed to bring this thing into a 57-win regular season. And the thing you always have to keep in mind is that for everyone who wants to discount the value of an NBA regular season, no one has success in the playoffs if you don't achieve a level of elite excellence in the regular season. No one typically anyway comes out of nowhere to win in the NBA playoffs. There might be an upset in a series. The Houston Rockets back in 95 did have a run as a sixth seed, but they had been a champion before. But that's the only example in recent history where there wasn't a champion that didn't come out of a group of a select number of teams that achieved a very high level of regular season excellence that were in your top five or six records in the NBA over the course of a season.
Okay, we've got to talk about Peja Stojakovic because he does bring a tremendous amount of value. He truly is something special, and it's interesting, in postgame, I asked Coach Carlisle, you know, about his offensive contributions, and he quickly pointed out, you know, just his defensive execution. You know, he said his shot-making was great and it was timely, but his defense was better, and to me, that is really a strong statement.
Well, I know how much you like Stojakovic. I think the last time we did this, you were calling him the sweet pea, right?
That's right.
Yep. I think that the thing is that Rick, you know, believes so firmly in defense being the key to this thing. And he said some nights your shots aren't going to go in, but defense and rebounding is the thing that always travels. You can win games by out-defending people much, much more so than you can win games by outscoring people. And Peja's got some length, and, you know, nobody's going to vote for the guy for an all-defensive team, but he does have some size to make it a little bit more difficult, and size is important in this series because of Portland's length and athleticism. And Peja had 5 rebounds in the time he was out on the floor the other night as well. But, of course, look, we're all going to look at the shot-making because that's the thing in basketball that people focus on so much. I mean, it's the deodorant that can mask anything is making shots. Whatever problem you've got, if you make shots, then people will overlook the other problems. Like I said, it's the great deodorant of basketball. And Peja's shot-making was obviously huge the other night. It was great to see him play a really good all-around game, though. And I think, once again, you're looking at a veteran who's had a tremendous career. I don't know that Peja's a Hall of Famer, but certainly he's had a really, really great career. 4th all-time and made threes, one of the greatest free-throw shooters ever to play, a 3-time former All-Star, a guy who's averaged 17 points a game in his career. He's done a lot of great things in regular season basketball, and he wants that thing that will help define his career championship, too. And that's why he ended up in Dallas after being bought out by the Raptors earlier in the year. And I think that the Mavs got him for these situations where he's going to help space the floor on offense and be a guy that's a great complement on the weak side whenever Dirk gets doubled and give you that dead-eye shooter. And obviously that's the focus of a lot of what he did the other night, and it was great.
You know how Peja makes it look so easy. He's dropping those threes as if they were like a high percentage shot, Mark. I mean, it's great. I have to tell you, one thing, we got to talk about this. I mean, 6 turnovers in game 2. I mean, that was unprecedented. And that was one of the things late in the season they really had to try to minimize and try to get that in single digits. But 6 turnovers in a playoff game, I thought, you talk about valuing the possession of your basketball.
Well, they had a real problem with some turnovers late in the year. But The no turnover second half that they had, I believe that that's just the second time in NBA playoff history that a team's had no turnovers in the second half of a playoff game. So it certainly was rare and unique, had a big aspect to the win. And the thing that it does is I think turnovers are extremely important in this series because when you turn it over, you give Portland, a team that doesn't run very much, an opportunity to score easy baskets. So that's one aspect that hurts you. And then it's shots that you never even get to take. And playoffs are magnified because the game slows down, the possessions are fewer, and that's particularly the case whenever you're looking at the Mavs and the Trailblazers because Portland loves to play a grinded-out, half-court, slow-it-down game. And these Mavs-Blazers games have been played at a slower pace than any of the other playoff games. For example, in the opening weekend, the possession number in the Mavs-Blazers game was 83. The other playoff games are being played where the possessions are up in the high 80s to mid-90s. So as you can see, in this particular series, the value of every possession becomes magnified. And when you turn it over, not only do you probably make it easier for your opponent to score because they're going to get the ball out on the floor in a transition situation if it's a live ball turnover, but again, it's a shot that you never even get to take. And so that keeps you from having an opportunity to score, and the opportunities to score are very, very precious in the playoffs, and you just have to capitalize when you can. So turnovers are a huge enemy and a huge detriment to you in the playoffs, and that's why keeping them down so low the other night enabled the Mavericks to win the game.
You're listening to the voice of Mark Folliwell, the Mavs television play-by-play announcer, and I've got to ask you this. You're up there in Portland. Of course, the Mavs, now correct me if I'm wrong, they had the best what road record in the NBA in the regular season, what, 28-13?
Yeah, tied with Miami for the best road record.
Okay, but, you know, playing on the road, obviously it's never an easy thing at the Rose Garden. That's a venue that's very difficult, and they did struggle there in their two trips to Portland the regular season. Tell me, I've never been there. I mean, what makes this the Rose Garden such a difficult place to play? I mean, it's got one of the NBA's, you know, rowdiest crowds, but it certainly is a proud organization and their fans.
Well, I think it's a rowdy fan base. That's where it is. It's a building that is not a cavernous building like some of the new ones. It was built back in 1995, but there's still room to get a crowd for basketball of 20,630 in there. So you have a huge crowd and a not ginormous building that where you're going to lose some of the impact of a big crowd. There's still enough of an on top of you feel, maybe not like Energy Solutions Arena in Utah, but there's still a feel of the crowd being close, and they're just a very, very rabid fan base. It's a one horse town in terms of it's the only professional sports team that's here in town. I don't mean that insulting to Portland at all. It's just that there's a great love affair with the fans and the team here. And, it goes all the way back to Blazer Mania when they won their first and only NBA championship when Bill Walton and Dr. Jack Ramsey was coaching the team and, Lionel Hollins, the L-Train, and, the late Maurice Lucas, all those guys were here back in the late 70s, 1977, when they won the title, beating the 76ers. That's when Blazer Mania started, and there's been a great relationship between the fans and the Blazer organization since then because it is, again, the only professional sports team here in town of the Big Four anyway. And so they're just an extremely rabid, loud fan base that people probably don't realize because it's tucked off here in this forgotten part of the country up here in the Pacific Northwest. And especially now that Seattle's out of here, they've lost that geographic rival. So they really are this one little lone entity that's hanging around up here. But trust me, it's a great city. It's a great arena. And the thing that makes it a tough place to play is it's just a crowd that gets into the game that's very loud and that's very, very passionate.
Reliving some of those times with the Portland Trailblazers almost makes you want to think of Cher, if you could turn back the hands of time. It's
great. Well, they had a great run back then.
They did.
They certainly did have a great run, and they surprised everyone. They shocked the world when they won it back in 1977.
77, Bill Walton.
Yes, absolutely. He was the mainstay of that team, and, that's why, they had such a tremendous team, too, in the 80s and 90s with Clyde Drexler and Jerome Kersey and Buck Williams and all those guys that got into the finals a couple of times. They lost once to Detroit. They lost once to Chicago. And that's why this thing, it was such a hard time for the organization earlier in this decade when they went through the Jailblazer era and the team was sort of defined by its travails off the floor as much as it was whatever success they had on the court. And when you had Rasheed Wallace and Bonzi Wells and Damon Stoudemire and a lot of those guys getting in trouble, it was a real tough time. It was a real black eye for the organization and a real tough time for the fan base. And that connection was lost for some period of time. But Paul Allen, the owner, and the then general manager Kevin Pritchard, they cleaned house. They went through two or three rough years. They had some good drafts. and think how good this thing would be if Brandon Roy hadn't been hurt this year and is not the same player that he once was. And, of course, Greg Oden as well, the number one overall pick from 2007. And man, what a draft they thought they had when they got Greg Oden when they won that lottery. But clearly, health has robbed him of the opportunity to do some of the things that he thought he could do.
We were flat out of time. We didn't even get a chance to talk about Brandon Roy. And, just anyone that's a basketball fan, your heart really goes out to him and, kind of what he's going through and doesn't have the physical capabilities that and strengths that he has had in the past with his knees. So, Mark, we will look forward to catching up with you again real soon, doing a great job on the telecast. And I tell you what, over here in Fort Worth, you got a lot of fans that enjoy listening to you on the ticket, too. So keep up the great work.
To hear. Really, really appreciate it and love doing these first-round games. Wish we could do all the TV broadcasts, but we love doing the first round games for sure. There's a lot of excitement.
Outstanding. We'll catch up with you again real soon. Thanks, Mark.